podcast from the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's Office of National Mission. This is God's Mission Here.
Thanks so much for joining us. I'm your host, Steph Nugebauer, here with my co-host, Deaconess Dr. Tiffany Manor, and our guest for today, Kelly Minky. When you think of first aid, you probably think of maybe Band-Aids, Neosporin, anything that might be in your medicine cabinet for urgent physical ailments of any kind. Well, today we'll be introduced to the concept of mental health first aid, which is arguably just as important to have close at hand. Kelly will be sharing with us the why and the how behind mental health first aid as we consider how we might better care for the mental health of those around us. Before we go much further, I'd like to share that the three of us are not licensed counselors or therapists. Our discussion today is from the perspective of church workers who care for our neighbors. Kelly, welcome. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, thank you. I appreciate being able to be on here. I am the health and wellness educator for Concordia Plans. I've been working with Concordia Plans for just a couple of years and able to pull in experience and life from the past 22 plus years as a military spouse, mother of three, and filling in roles of all aspects of health and wellness. So I'm pleased to be able to provide support and whatever else I can for church workers.
Oh, Kelly, it's been a joy to get to know you. I think we met, you probably hadn't been with Concordia Plans all that long, and we've been able to work on a few projects together. And it's been fascinating to me to think about mental health and well-being. Early on in my career, I probably wasn't thinking about it much. And then I started serving the church and realized, you know, God makes us completely that's body and soul. And that means he created our emotions. And oftentimes when people are talking about mental health, they're talking about what clinical providers might describe as emotional and behavioral health. And, you know, it's really encouraging to me that, particularly throughout the church, that the stigma in talking about our mental health, our emotions and behaviors is starting to lessen. I mean, it's not completely gone, but having these opportunities to talk, you know, with people like yourself, with Steph, I mean, that we're not professionals, but we care about our own mental health. We care about the people who God's given us in our lives, their mental health. And so we can have this conversation today and you know, maybe break down some barriers and stigma around mental health in the church so that we're able to care for ourselves and others better than we might have been. So, Kelly, I'd love to hear your thoughts or your explanation about why care for mental health is important.
Well, I think, first of all, you hit the nail on the head. Like, it encompasses so much in trying to reduce or eliminate that stigma of when we hear that term mental health, what things that brings to mind, concerns, whatever. But to look at it as an asset, our mental health that we all have, again, is a God-given gift of how we relate to others, our resilience, how we think, we feel, we behave. So there's so much more to it than just the negative stigma that has kind of waxed and waned over the years. But again, the way that you stated it as well is we are created body, mind, and soul. And those areas of our life don't live independently. So we can't neglect our mental health and expect our physical, emotional, behavioral health to be healthy. And then that affects people in our lives, that affects how we relate to others, and then further care for ourselves. So looking at it from a holistic perspective, how can we not care for our mental health, I think is a more pressing question.
It might be helpful to define terms, honestly, as much for me as for our listeners. What is meant by mental health? Can you clarify what that means?
Absolutely. So looking at our health in general, it's kind of an overarching term where you look at our health, and even by definition from, say, World Health Organization, where it's not just living with the absence of infirmity. There's all of those different aspects that are pulled into that. So the same thing with mental health. We all have mental health. It's those different aspects of it that we need to pull out and differentiate. Are we in good mental health? Are we going through a mental challenge? Are we then crossing over into a true mental illness. And so really need to differentiate those terms, like you stated. And we don't want to use them interchangeably. So that's where we're going to break that stigma as well, is not connecting those terms on a day-to-day basis. So thinking about what a mental illness is taking, say, a poor mental health challenge or something like that, and looking at where it has prolonged effects on someone's day-to-day living. Just as a physical injury isn't automatically a chronic condition, a mental health challenge isn't automatically a mental illness. There's a differentiating line of diagnosis, treatment, things like that. But there's also always the hope of recovery, no matter where you find yourself on that spectrum of mental health challenge, mental illness. We always want to go back to that higher set point and thriving and functioning.
And you said the word spectrum. Can you explain that a little bit more? What do you mean by that?
Absolutely. Yeah. So again, we all have mental health where we all want to start in that high functioning, positive, healthy mental health state. But we can all run into challenges of, you know, we're feeling down every once in a while, things like that. The key is to kind of bouncing back, building resilience so that you get back to that. And then maybe further down the line, if we don't find those prevention strategies, if we haven't found that way to build resilience, is where then on, you know, kind of the end of the spectrum is that a mental illness that becomes a little more chronic, needs deeper treatment, things like that. And then moving back through the spectrum, getting back into where there's those coping skills, there's support systems, there's things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're describing movement. And that was how one of my friends who's a psychologist was describing it too. Like, you know, you're just always in one place. There's movement back and forth between mental health and well-being, illness, you know, mental disorders, you mentioned the diagnosed mental disorders that, of course, a professional, a physician would make those diagnoses. You know, and it's a blessing. God has given us so many gifts to care for mental disorders and illnesses. You know, he's given us physicians and prescription medication, you know, and therapists as well. And while I'm, you know, we've already mentioned it, I'm not a licensed therapist or counselor, but I did pretty extensive research for my doctoral dissertation, which was focused on training programs for suicide prevention. And that was where I first encountered mental health first aid as a program, as a training that you can take. And, you know, certainly a lot of other options for, you know, the average person like myself, you know, who's not a professional psychologist. Things like, you know, Living Works or QPR, which, you know, is interesting. It intentionally rhymes with CPR, but just, you know, the letter Q is traded out. So also drawing on that, the connection that we have with the physical health and well-being and training programs that people learn for CPR or first aid. You know, there's things like Safe Talk, Sources of Strength, and these are all good training programs, and, you know, there are Lutherans who have taken all of them and found they've learned new skills. And the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, in our health ministry, we've even created a distinctly Lutheran training that's focused on teachers and youth workers to help support the mental health and well-being of children and youth. And we can, you know, provide in the show notes some links to that particular training program. But today we wanted to talk specifically about mental health first aid. And Kelly, you've got a greater depth of experience. I've taken it twice for my assessment in my dissertation process, but you have done a much deeper dive. So what can you tell us about mental health first aid? What exactly is it?
Well, there are various levels, just like there are with CPR. Also similar to, you know, physical CPR, you don't come out of it with, you know, your doctorate in psychology or anything like that. It is truly meant to be that frontline support for a mental health challenge. Just like, you know, if you see someone who falls and hurts themselves, you're providing that frontline physical health support. It covers the common signs and symptoms so that we can notice, that we can be aware of when someone might be experiencing a mental health challenge, anywhere from, you know, anxiety, depression to substance abuse. So kind of being able to differentiate without diagnosing what might be going on and the best point to intervene and provide support. giving some tools in our toolbox, just like the first aid kit with the Band-Aids and Neosporin, having those conversation starters, those tools to feel confident to have some tough conversations with others. That's the big part of the training, is to practice some of those tough conversations and observe those scenarios that you might encounter and not really know how to approach and be familiar. It provides action steps based off of the curriculum. It's ALGI is the acronym for it, where again you're kind of observing, being aware, knowing how to approach, listening non-judgmentally, giving information without advice, you know, so some of those good listening skills that we can all kind of use when we're having conversations with others, specifically when we want to be de-escalating a situation and providing support, not our opinion, not this is what you should do kind of conversations. And then also knowing where we do have resources, where it does make sense to connect others to the next level of support. Because again, we're not clinicians, we're not the professionals, we're trying to close that gap between someone who is experiencing a challenge and where they can find the next best support area.
What does training look like, Kelly? And what are some examples? I mean, you mentioned in broad sense of what you learn, but what are some examples of parts of the courses or specific tools even that participants are given? I'm assuming that going through this program is helpful to the trainee so that they can help and care for others, whether it's in their congregation, community, what have you, and probably not so much like diagnostic for the individual taking the course, correct?
Right. Yeah, so there are resources, again, so that we can better identify, again, being comfortable with those observations, you know, kind of knowing that we're not just being nosy. I think there's a lot of those conversations that we have within the group sessions of, well, I don't want to impose and I don't want to judge and I don't, it's really saying, no, you're not, you're shedding a light, essentially, when you are noticing. A big part of approaching someone and saying something along the lines of, you know, you really aren't acting like yourself. Is everything okay? Or would you like to meet for lunch later? I'd really like to talk with you about, you know, what's going on in your life lately. That in itself brings maybe some dark thoughts out of the darkness and shows that person that you care, when they may not think that anybody cares. One thing about maybe going through any kind of a mental health challenge is it can be very isolating, and we don't want anyone to feel like they're alone in a struggle that they're going through. We're called to come alongside and to support and provide whatever love looks like in that situation. What better way to be the hands and feet than to sit down next to someone and say, can I talk with you? Are you doing okay? Do you want to talk with me? Is there something I can do for you? So this training starts to slowly kind of unpack what these scenarios might look like, what our role is as a mental health first aider in those conversations, starting with, here's what it might look like. Here's what it might not look like. And be okay asking, hey, are you okay? And hearing whether they're truly okay in their response. And then the steps to take from there, finding a safe space, what non-judgmental listening looks like, what resources look like. And it does this again in a very stair-stepped approach. It starts with 2 hours of self-paced virtual pre-work. That's a mouthful. Where once someone registers to participate, they're given an account with the Mental Health First Aid Connect. Then they can start to work through the modules of the 2-hour pre-work. It really lays the foundation of this is what mental health first aid is and this is what it is not. There is a lot of honing in on this is within scope and this is not. And this is when you realize you're kind of getting outside of scope. Here's the professionals. Here's maybe the next step for guidance to, you know, this really isn't my expertise, but I know someone that might be able to help you, and kind of segueing into the next level of prevention, thinking of primary, secondary, and tertiary prevention, noticing where we were kind of stair-stepping into those. The purpose of this program is to prevent, is to catch as early as possible. So then we work on in the in-person part of it, either via a Zoom link or truly face-to-face in an in-person setting, walking through what crisis looks like from the primary, secondary, tertiary perspective. And a lot of the questions are, is this person in crisis? How do you know whether they're in crisis or not? So again, being a little more comfortable, building that confidence and having some tools in our back pocket of understanding, are we in crisis? And what do I do if we are or we aren't in that situation?
So is that a day-long thing when you're in person mm-hmm. or Zoom?
Yeah, after the 2 hours of self-paced pre-work, the come together in person of some nature training is about 7 hours. We take a couple of 10 to 15 minute breaks, and then we break for a full at least 30 minute lunch. It gets to be pretty heavy material, so we're pretty adamant about taking those breaks, encouraging participants to take care of themselves during it. It's great to learn the skills, to know how to support others, but it's also very supportive of the participants. They become very self-aware of maybe things that they're challenged with, or thinking of family members, but then how to take care of themselves too. There's a big portion of it as well that is about their own care, either in general, you know, as a daily practice, or after providing mental health first aid, kind of having someone they can debrief with and make sure that it's not something that they hold on to and carry a heavy burden about.
I'm so glad you brought that up about carrying burdens, because we bear each other's burdens. You already referenced that. You know what? This is Galatians 6:2, where we come alongside brothers and sisters in Christ and bear burdens together. And of course, Jesus Christ is the ultimate burden bearer, who invites us to be yoked with him. And he says that his yoke is very easy and light, because he's the one who's borne all of our burdens and taken them to the cross and died and was resurrected for us. So that, you know, is something that as Christians we can focus on. Now, the two times I completed mental health first aid training, it was really obvious to me that it was, you know, purely secular program. It was not, there was no Christian theology, you know, not specifically Lutheran theology. And, you know, really that was a positive for me, because it means that our folks can have a direct connection with their pastors, with their Lutheran pastors, to get the theology to accompany the training. So it doesn't mean that our supportive mental health training is separated from theology, but it allows us as Lutherans to really bring to bear our you know, distinct Lutheran theology and our emphasis on the gospel to restore hope. So that is pretty nice, and it means that a lot of people can access this. They don't have to have some basic understanding of psychology or the Bible or anything. But I think it would be good to hear directly from you about, you know, who should take this training and why it would be important for others to get trained.
I would love everybody to be trained. And I know that's not realistic, but specifically in the area of church worker support, I don't want to use the word obligation, but I think we all find ourselves in the environment to support others. So if you have questions about, hey, I know somebody and I didn't quite know how to talk to them, or I myself could use this information just to know what the opportunities are, truly, if you're interested, get trained. For what the Concordia Plans in the Missouri District is offering, it is to truly any of our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod church workers, lay workers, pastors who are interested, that's what we're here for. We have two more trainings available for 2024. They're actually filling up fast, so I'm excited about that. That are going to be, they're 100% in person for that 7 hours of training. starting in 2025, because currently it's just myself and Reverend Marty Haas, who are trained as facilitators for specifically the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. So we're trying to keep our own mental health under under a healthy umbrella. For 2025, we are looking to expand and be able to just provide it more accessibly and do more virtual or hybrid trainings. I am not a Zoom expert, so that in itself makes me a little nervous, and I need some time to prepare. But we are hoping that each year to hold no less than three trainings of some format or the other. And however we can get the information out about opportunities for registration, things like that, we are doing.
What context, you had already mentioned for, you know, church worker support, but maybe mm-hmm. paint a picture for us of what this could look like in a congregational setting. Layperson who's gone through the training, how might they sure. use that in their own church?
Well, currently we have lots of human resource personnel that have already gone through the training with us, a handful of pastors, parish nurses, teachers. So right now we're only offering the adult mental health first aid, so it's adult to adult conversations, but it really is scalable to anybody that you're talking with, just knowing your audience essentially. It's kind of advertised, if that's the word, to say coworker to coworker, being able to reach out if you notice a coworker having a struggle, or just building relationships, getting back to face-to-face conversations and being okay with where those conversations go. But a lot of the human resource personnel that we've had come in look at it from the perspective of, okay, I need to take my human resource director hat off and become my, you know, staff or my coworker's, you know, friend or support in that situation. How do I do that? And how do I break down those barriers of them looking at me as their leader, as their boss, whatever those terms are, and truly help them see that I'm not wearing that hat right now. I want to have this conversation with them. And then what resources do I have to point them in, you know, a supportive direction? That's the majority of the conversations.
That's helpful. So when we talk about first aid, we kind of think of emergent situations. Mm-hmm. Why is it important to be able to have these tools so that we can identify a mental health challenge early on?
Well, I kind of going back to any kind of a physical medical reference, if you know anybody who has been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, you know that they've probably gone to their doctor before that. They're getting blood sugars tested. There's those signs and symptoms kind of leading up to that chronic condition, and steps that can be taken early on to prevent or prolong. That's essentially kind of that spectrum that I was, you know, kind of alluding to before. Knowing what a mental health challenge might look like earlier allows for that earlier prevention and can eliminate the possibility of it turning into a crisis situation where we are coming alongside sooner and in keeping people from that prolonged isolation. Again, shedding that light on those attacks from the enemy, those negative conversations that happen in our head sometimes, and we feel like we're all alone in that. That can escalate fairly quickly, and we're looking for help, support in the wrong areas, and can lead us down some really dangerous paths. So trying to avoid as much as possible any kind of substance abuse, thoughts of suicide, things of those natures. That's where we want to prevent anyone from getting to that point. So first of all, it takes observing and being aware and comfortable with having those early conversations, and then early intervention is key to preventing that escalation to a crisis situation.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so important. And, you know, we've talked throughout this conversation, and now as we wrap up, you know, as we think about other things that are crucially important We mentioned how the gospel is so important for the church, for Christians, and that is something that we extend to people by caring for mental health and to, you know, be prepared in advance of that so that you're not caught off guard when you're with someone you think, oh, they might be having a mental health challenge. This care for people in both body and soul has always been a way of sharing Christ's love and mercy with our neighbors. And that is our mission, right? That's the church's mission, to proclaim Christ to the people around us. So that's something for us to consider. How do we close out this conversation and describe in a summation of what's important for Christians, specifically Christians, to care for the mental health of the people around them? What would you say to that, Kelly?
I think of the story of the Good Samaritan and who's my neighbor? Who do I consider my neighbor? How do I love my neighbor? What better way to observe and show mercy to those around us, especially our church workers who are the hands and feet on a daily basis and kind of getting into the trenches of this unfortunately broken world that, again, we bear burdens, can feel the weight of that. And unfortunately, as Christians, we aren't immune to what this broken world has and what it kind of throws at us. So for us to know how to support each other with evidence-based tools as well as the gospel, there's no better way I can think of to kind of bring the best of both worlds together and be able to meet someone where they are, regardless, like you said, of their background or whatever that might look like.
Kelly, you've brought some really wonderful insights for us to consider. I learned something new, actually several new things, just by listening to you and even Tiffany, who's been through it a couple times herself. So I thank you so much for joining us and sharing this with us. And as Tiffany said, we'll provide the links in our show notes so that if you're interested in being trained, you can check that out.
I appreciate being on here. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us. If you liked what you heard, please leave us a review and don't forget to click the follow or subscribe button so that you don't miss out on upcoming episodes. God's Mission Here is a podcast that discusses Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation, and how He delivers those gifts where you live and serve.